Okay. Find your chairs. Find that place in your devotional service where you're really going to be comfortable, where it's really you. Okay? That special place where you can feel really secure. Okay, good. Our program today, come on. Today we propose to cut to the chase, as they say in America, which means get down to the nitty-gritty or the nub of the thing or the center of the piece. Give a couple more minutes here. Moments, rather. Okay. Okay. Special dispensations here. There's a chair over in the corner. Okay. We've heard much of the need to get in touch with our feelings. Sometimes this has been expressed as the need to acknowledge and fulfill our unresolved, unsatisfied emotional needs. So today we're going to talk about what are those emotional needs. Got a chair there for Marjorie? Okay. The original need is the original emotional need is the need of the soul to exchange love with Krishna. Krishnendriya Priti Vancha Dhari Premana. The natural business, natural function of the soul is to be engaged in pleasing the senses of Krishna, in giving enjoyment to Krishna. And that's the essential function of the living being. Savaipam sampuro dharma yato bhaktir hokshaje. Dharma means that essence of a thing, or essence of, in this case, the soul. Haitakiya pratiyata yayatma supersedati. And by performing that activity of pleasing Krishna, the living being himself will be supersedati, fully satisfied. All one's emotional needs will be fully satisfied when one is engaged in that way, in pleasing the senses of Krishna. But when people speak of their unfulfilled emotional needs, that's not usually what they're talking about. What are they talking about? They're not talking about satisfying Krishna. They're talking about satisfying themselves. Atmendriya Priti Vancha Tare Balikam. In this context, emotional needs translates into Sanskrit as kama. And kama translates back into English as lust. what people are saying then is, listen, I want to gratify my lusty desires, okay? That's the translation. I need to satisfy my unfulfilled emotional needs means I'm lusty. I've got lusty desires, and I might have to satisfy them. So you say to them, well, that doesn't sound like such a wise idea. And they have a chosen quotation for reply, which is Bhagavad Gita 3:33. Sadrusham cheshtate svasya prakriter gyanavan api prakritim yanti bhutani nigraha kim karishyati. Even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature, for everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? This has become a theme song, just as in India the theme song is Karmanyeva Dikariste. Everyone has a right to work. So especially we hear from, because Indian people are by nature very dutiful, they're engaged in their occupation. So everyone knows a few verses, and this one is almost always one of them. Everybody has a right to perform his prescribed work. And that means that you should work, 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 and work. So because we're more focused, we're not busy in working to make a living exclusively, we're devotees, so we have our own chosen verse, Nigraha Kim Karishyati, what will repression accomplish? And it's become a theme on the hit parade, the ISKCON hit parade. So let's look at this verse in its context. First of all, what Krishna is talking about is one's acquired characteristic as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra. That's the context. The Lord is saying that you're a Kshatriya, and you have to fight. It's your nature to fight. Everyone has to act according to his nature. So since you've acquired the nature of a Kshatriya, nobody can stop working. Everybody has to act. So you should act as a Kshatriya. What use is it to try to pretend to be a Brahmin and renounce the fighting? What will repression accomplish? But of course, when it's quoted, and usually only one line is what's required, the meaning is, listen, if I don't satisfy my lusty desires, I'm going to go nuts. I'm going to go crazy. Because psychology has given us the pressure cooker model of human psychological makeup. You see, man is a great big steam kettle. And the steam builds up and builds up and builds up and builds up. And if you don't finally let that steam out, that old boiler pot's just going to explode and make a mess everywhere. So what will repression accomplish? You've got to let off steam here, there, or wherever. The critique, of course, of this argument is that neither Freud nor Jung nor Adler nor any of the modern followers of these psychological pioneers have found any mechanism within the human being that remotely resembles a pressure cooker. No steam has been detected. It's all metaphorical. And it's simply a one outlook on the world, one outlook on the living being's psychological makeup, and it doesn't happen to be Krishna's. Now we'll get into what Krishna says. What can repression accomplish? Now, from this one might expect that now Krishna is going to say, well, what can repression accomplish? You might as well, you know, give your senses a little action. Let them have a little, you know, day off every week or so at least. Now, the subsequent verses. Indriyasya indriyasyarte raga dvesha vyavastito tayora navashamagach chet tohyasya paripantano. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. Okay. Shreyan svadharmo viguna paradharmat sunushtitat sudharme nidanam shreya paradharmo bhayavaha. It's better to discharge one's own prescribed duties, even though faultily, than another's duties perfectly. Destruction in the course of performing one's own duty is better than engaging in another's duty, for to follow another's path is dangerous. And that's the end of Krishna's speech here. Now, Arjuna has a question. Atakena priyukto yam papam shadati purusha anichchan apivarshneya balad even niyojita. My dear Krishna, by what is one impelled to sinful acts? Papam shadati purusha. Why does a living being engage in pap, sinful activities? Kena prayukta, impelled by what? Anichchan, not even desiring to do it, without his desire, without his will. Anichchan api varshneya balad eva niyojita, as if engaged by force. What is it that's making him do it? Sri Bhagavan vacha, kamesha krodhesha, Rajaguna Samudbhava Mahashano Mahapapma Vidhyenam Iha Vairinam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it's lust only, Arjuna. Born of contact with the material mode of passion, and later transformed into wrath, anger, and which is the all devouring sinful enemy of this world. This is Krishna's statement. Mahashino Mahapatma, that great source of sin, Ihavairinam, and the greatest enemy. Dhumenavriyate vanir yata darsho malenacha yutolvenavrito garbas tata tenedam avritam. As fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror by dust, or as the embryo by the womb, the living entity is covered by different degrees of lust. Avritam ganametena ganino nityavairina kamarupena kontya dushpurena analenacha. Avritam ganametena ganina. Ganina means the wise living entity, gani, one who has knowledge. Ganina. Avritam gana etena. By this, by lust, etena, by this agent. Ganam avritam. He's gani, he's full of knowledge by his nature. But ganam avritam. His knowledge is covered. Either the way a mirror is covered by dust, or the way the fire is covered by smoke, or the way that the embryo is covered by the womb, completely covered. The wise living entity's knowledge is covered. In other words, he becomes a fool. Kama Rupena Kuntia. By lust. An academic debate, but the fact is that the Nitya Jiva, the eternal living entity, has his Nitya Vairina, his eternal enemy. As long as he's been in this material world, he's had this problem. Kama Rupena Kuntia. Lusty desires. Dushpurena Analena Cha. And Dushpura means not pura means full, huh? And Dushpurena, not possible to fulfill. Secret one of lusty desires. They're never fulfilled. The project of fulfilling one's desires, the project of satisfying one's emotional needs, is guaranteed to be a failure. It will never happen. The needs will always outdistance the capability to fulfill them. Dushpurena. Dushpura means not possible to fulfill, never to be satisfied. And analena means burning. It's not fun. Lusty desire is not pleasing. It's not a source of actual pleasure to the living entity. Kanduyanena karayor iva dukkha dukkham. Prahlad Maharaj says it's like a scratching sensation. Yes, one of the pleasures in life is if you have an itch to scratch it. But the nature of itches and scratching, all of us who've had poison ivy, the more you scratch, the more you itch. And that's not enjoyment, scratching itches and getting little welts on your skin that start to bleed with calamine lotion down your arm and all of that. Dushparena analena cha. It's misery. And the business of satisfaction of the senses is the business of trying to lessen the misery, that's all. And the secret is that the more you go at it, the more it becomes miserable. The more your misery increases. Not my personal bias. That's the statement of Prahlad Maharaj. Kanduyanena karayor iva dukkha dukkham. The more you try to satisfy the scratching, the itching by scratching, the more you become miserable. Iva dukkha dukkham. That's the way it is. That's the way the world's made. That's the way it's constituted. That's the way things are set up. That's what Krishna says. Indriyani mano buddhir asya dishthana munchite etar vimohayat yesha gyanam avritya dehinam. Then someone says, where is this lust? I don't see it. Where is it? Where is headquarters? Headquarters is identified. Indriyani, the senses are polluted by lust. Mana, the mind, which we were reading yesterday in the opinion of one great self-realized mundane authority, is non-different from the soul. So that mental life and spiritual life are one and the same. That mind is contaminated by lusty desires. And buddhi, intelligence, is also contaminated by lusty desire. The mind is full of garbage. And the intelligence has been engaged in the service of the mind. Therefore, there are all sorts of people running around using their God-given intelligence to figure out this way, that way, or the other way to satisfy their lusty desires. That's all. It's not that the animals also have it, they have intelligence, and they use it to satisfy their desires for eating, sleeping, mating, defending. The human beings are also using their intelligence for that. Indriyani mano buddhir asyadishtana muchate. The lust is occupied, the senses, the intelligence, the mind. Etai, and by these, through these, vimohayati, it's causing bewilderment. Through the mind, through the intelligence, through the senses, lust is working. Gyanam avritya dehinam, and covering the knowledge of the embodied living being. So it's a pretty bleak state of affairs. We've got our permanent enemy, which is powerful, balad, it's got powerful force, burns like fire, can't be satisfied, can't be appeased, and has gotten hold of our senses, our mind, our intelligence. What to do? There are those who would say, well, it's simple what you do. Don't demonize your desires. Don't deny them. Don't repress them. Don't fail to acknowledge them. Don't refuse them their proper place. Go at it. Here's what Krishna says. Tasmat tvam indriyanyado niyamya bharatarshada. Papmanam prajihihinam gyanavigyana nashana. What is the business of, what is the effect of lusty desire? Gyana vigyana nashana. Gyan means knowledge. And vigyan means, Prabhupada gives it two different ways. One way is love of Krishna. Because vijnana means specific knowledge. So knowledge of one's relationship with the personality of Godhead is vijnana. Or more usually Prabhupada gives vijnana as applied application. That's applied application, sorry about that. Application, practical application. Gyanam is the theoretical knowledge, and vijnana is the ability to apply that knowledge in your own life. And lust is jnana vijnana nashanam. It wipes them both out. You lose your brain and you lose your ability to use it. You lose your knowledge, you lose the ability to apply your knowledge. Jnana vijnana nashanam. That's lust. Papmanam. So Krishna says, tasmat, because it's such bad news, tam, you, indriyani ado niyamya. You should regulate the senses. Indriyani, the senses should be regulated. When? Ado, from day one. From the beginning. Chanakya Pandit says, death, disease, and fire, you deal with them right away. Because otherwise they grow on you, and what are you going to do when fire is out of control, when debt is compounded and compounded and compounded, when disease is to the critical stage? Then what will you do? Then you're helpless. I'm overwhelmed by debt. I've got an incurable disease. If fire is raging out of control, then what can be done? But in the beginning, the fire was just, you know, someone threw a match in the corner. The debt was, you know, $20 on your credit card that you didn't pay off. The disease was, you know, a little cough that you should have taken some Brahmastra juice for. But you neglected it, and now it's, nothing can be done. Therefore, Krishna says, ado, from the very beginning. Not that it should, lust should be entertained. Well, let's see where it goes for a while. We know where it's going to go. Therefore, from the beginning, where ado means from brahmacharya life. Komara Atre Pragyad Dharman Bhagavita. Before lust even gets started, because you know it's going to get started. There's this horrible thing called adolescence, which is a source of trouble and disturbance and pain for everyone, because that's when lusty desires, you know, all those little hormones with their little tiny time capsules, you know, they start shooting away. And lust starts its business. So the Vedic strategy is that before that even happens, the child is trained as a brahmachari. Before the senses start going this way and that way and the other way, he's trained how to control the senses. So that by the time lust gets going, he's already trained what to do. Niyamya, control the senses. Papmanam prajahi. Prajahi means curb lust. Curb it down. Indriyani pranyahur indriyebhya paramanaha manasastu parabuddhir yo buddhe paratastu sa. Krishna says that higher than the senses, higher than the sense objects or the senses, higher than the sense objects, senses, sorry, is the mind. Higher than the mind is the intelligence. Yo buddhe paratastu sa. And higher than the intelligence is the spirit soul. Evam buddhe param buddhva samstabhyatmanam atmana jahi shatrum mahabaho kamarupam durasanam. Conclusion of the chapter, Krishna says, therefore, thus, in this way, buddhe param buddhva, knowing that you are transcendental to the material senses, transcendental to the mind, transcendental to the intelligence, samstabhya atmanam, atmana. One has to steady the mind, samstabhya. Samstabhya means completely make it steady. Atmana, by deliberate spiritual intelligence. Steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness. And thus, by spiritual strength, jahi shatrum. Conquer that enemy, shatru, kama-rupa durasana, in the form of that insatiable, formidable lust. Conquer it. That's the end of the chapter. And when they quote, nigraham kim karishyati, what will repression accomplish? Just tell him, listen, buddy, go back and read the rest of the chapter, will you? And we're so eager to read Gita Govinda or whatever else we need for our spiritual life. This is the stuff we need. Bhagavad Gita chapter 3. Bhagavad Gita chapter 3. Lust should not be entertained. It should not be seen as an integral part of our emotional identity. It should be seen as an enemy, and it should be treated as an enemy. That's all. Jahi shatrum mahabaho kamarupa durasadam. Cut it. Indriyanyado niyamya. Control the senses from the beginning. And conquer lusty desires. That's what Krishna is saying. Otherwise, trouble, more trouble, and still more trouble. And I'm going to stop here and just take some questions. Yes?
When we were trying to figure out how discipline should become in the world, because of it has some failures. So we were thinking how what is this discipline, how to apply it. What your Prabhupada says about that is that it should be applied with love. Mm. So then when you speak like that, it is an ending. It is like not taken with love.
Right. We don't love lust around here. We have lots of friends. We have lots of people we love. We love all the kids. We can't stand lust. It stinks. We're equal to all. We have no friends, no enemies. No one's especially close, and no one's antithetical toward us, but lust stinks. It's just an enemy. We don't love it. We don't even like it. We hate it. Good.
Hmm. But the way it is treated should be done with love.
The person should be treated with love, and the lust should be treated with hate. We should make a neat distinction between the two. The lusty desires are not the same as the person who has the lusty desires. The person should be treated with all affection, compassion, and so on. And the lust should just be treated like enemy number one. Like a man with cancer. The man is very good and the cancer is very bad. Not love me, love my can. People want to make a case for it. If you love me, then you'll respect me, you'll accept me as I am. Translation, lusty desires and all. Love me, love my lust. Forget it. It's evidence that Krishna says that. What was that? Indriyani mano buddhira syadishtana munchite. The intelligence has become a sitting place of lust. And because the intelligence has been occupied by the enemy, the intelligence is busy cooking up this stuff. Cooking up all these rationalizations, cooking up all these philosophies, cooking up all these sound bites. To get you to buy the idea that really I'm all right. Lust isn't so bad after all. You know, I've got a bad rap. You know, lust has got a bad rap in the Bhagavad Gita and all these other places. Everybody's down on love. What's so bad about lust? It's healthy. It's healthy. Why are you down on me? So the intelligence is busy cooking up this stuff. And a Krishna conscious person has to have a sharper intelligence than that. He should not become victim of lusty senses, nor a lusty mind, nor a lusty intelligence. He should have superior spiritual intelligence directed by the soul, and the soul should be directed by Krishna. Is that okay? Hope so. Marsh.
This presentation of not loving the lust. Hmm. Is this for all classes of men, all the ashrams? Because there is a license for the grihasthas, so how mm-hmm. Would you explain this differently?
Okay.
But there are two different presentations, two different approaches.
No, there's one presentation. Lust stinks. That's why the Brahmacharya ashram is recommended. That's why the Vanaprastha ashram is recommended. That's why the sannyasa ashram is recommended, and that's why the grihastha ashram is recommended. Because lust is lousy. So as a brahmachari, one is trained to control lusty desires. As a grihastha, one is trained to restrict lusty desires. As a vanaprastha, one is trained to detach oneself from lusty desires. And as a sannyasi, one is trained to forget about lusty desires. There's no ashram that's meant for the cultivation of lusty desires. There's something else called grihamedhi life, where that's the business, but not in the ashram.
What is this procreation?
Dharmaviruddha kamosmi. The idea is that sex life is the cause of material entanglement, and therefore it should be stopped, or as close to stopped as possible. So the tendency is unrestricted sex life. But that's misery and more misery. So if there's a demand for sex life, it should be restricted as far as possible. Prabhupada gives the example of government licensing liquor shops. The government doesn't license liquor shops because liquor is good for you. It licenses them because it's bad for you. There's no license on bread or orange juice. But liquor, because it's bad. So it's restricted. License. License means restriction. Liquor license. So sex life is always bad for you, and therefore it's restricted. Brahmachari life, no sex. Vanaprastha life, association of women, but no sex relations. Sannyas, no sex. And grihastha ashram, no sex except for having children. Those are the rules. But those, the pro-lust forces want to tell you that the brahmacharya should become, brahmacharya should get married, the grihastha should have sex beyond the regulative principles, one should never become a vanaprastha, and if he's become a sannyasi, he should go back and become a grihastha again. That's the lusty propaganda. For the brahmacharis, there's some sort of, lust has got some sort of a mathematical theory of destiny. You know that such and such percentage of the brahmacharis get married, and therefore you should get married. It's inevitable that sooner or later you'll get married, so you might as well get married now. It's like sooner or later you're destined to get malaria, so why not get it now? Yes.
What is the difference between lust and greed? Because the way I understand it is that lust can somehow or other be regulated, it's regulating the senses. But greed is what I think you have been speaking about, that lust gets out of control.
Lust means out of control. That is to say that our real nature is to love Krishna. So any other thing, like loving this material body, means that we're already out of control. So now it's just a question of degree. So lust should be controlled. The tendency is for lust just to go on and on and on. So it needs to be controlled. Greed, close ally of lust, kama krodham tata lobham tasmadetam trayam tujet, Bhagavad Gita. Narakam tribidam narakasyedam dwaram nashanam atmana. Dwaram nashanam atmana. Atmana means the soul. The soul can't be killed. It's indestructible, immortal, and so on and so on. But in Bhagavad Gita, dvaram nashanam atmanah. There's a door to the destruction of the soul. Not one door, three doors. Kama, krodha, tata, lobha. Lust, anger, and greed. Tasmad etat trayam chire. Therefore, one should give these three up completely. Doesn't say, well, greed is no good, but lust isn't so bad. Or anger is really terrible, and greed's not far behind, but lust, cool. All three of them are doors to dvaram nashanam. They're to nashanam atmana, self-destruction. Yes?
Yeah. One more question. I've been a brahmachari for 12 years and then got married. Mm. So, for myself and also from others in a similar situation, I know that this threshold between brahmachari life and grihastha life is very psychologically very problematic, because as a brahmachari one is told and one has learned to control less. Mm. So what kind of help could you offer to discern between illegitimate lust and unallowed lust, and allowed desire to engage in one's proper ashram or even varna? What kind of help could you offer?
Well, varna doesn't really enter into it. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Brahmins have lusty desires, Kshatriyas have lusty desires, Vaishyas and Sudras have lusty desires. So, varna is not really at issue here. It's an ashram question.
Okay. So, what kind of help can you offer?
Prabhupada's advice, not as popular as it once was, is that if at all possible, one should avoid householder life. Contrary to popular rumor, that was not introduced by Tamal Krishna Goswami, along with the other 95% of the ills of ISKCON that he's supposed to have been responsible for. It came from Prabhupada. He's the one who said that. If possible, one should avoid it. If not possible, get married. The idea is that married life means restriction. And brahmacharya life means restriction. So if one is not able to restrict within the confines of brahmacharya life, then one should accept householder life and restrict sex within that. That's the idea. And the central idea, because it's not just restriction, but it's service to Krishna. Therefore, elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that just controlling the senses in itself is not everything. You have to get some superior taste. So the superior taste comes from serving Krishna, which is the real business. Whether one's brahmachari or grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyasi, the real business is to serve Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, glorify Krishna, hear about Krishna, be engaged in Krishna consciousness. So, one should do that as a brahmachari. And if it's too uncomfortable as a brahmachari, one should do the same business as a grihastha. It's only when we... And then grihastha life is nice, as far as possible. As far as possible. Otherwise, if we think that now I've got a license, it's like James Bond, license to kill. You'll kill yourself. It's not an unlimited license. It's not that when you're given a driver's license, you now have a license to drive down the highway at any speed, unless it's Germany. You don't have, right? In other countries, you don't have a license. Well, when the cop pulls you over, hey, buddy, you were doing 85 in a 60 zone. I got a license. No, you have a license to drive within the limits. And if you go beyond the limits, you're going to crack up. You're going to crack somebody else up. You're going to hurt yourself and you're going to hurt other people. So don't do it. Therefore, the regulative principles are there within householder life. And they're to be taken seriously. Not true to karma proof.
In terms of your like overall presentation, how do you deal with like Shastric statements and statements by Srila Prabhupada that lust, anger, greed can be engaged in devotional service? Mm-hmm.
Of course, anger, just like Hanuman, he became angry. So lust. Of course, lust is, what is that in Bhagavad Gita? Dharmaviruddha bhuteshu kamosmi paratarshada. Lust means man wants to associate with a woman, woman wants to associate with a man. So there's an authorized context for that activity. That's called householder life. And within that, sex life is considered representative of Krishna. When is for the purpose of having a Krishna conscious child? Lust is also not forbidden. Huh? The kama. Kama also has its proper application. So where is that? That's within householder life. The sannyasis and brahmacharis have no business with lust. The grahasthas can use that attraction for devotional service. Dharma viruddha bhuteshu kamosmi paratarshava. Or, when one applies that lust to Krishna, it becomes transformed to love. The gopis were apparently lusty, but because the object of their lust was Krishna, it was completely transcendental. It had nothing to do with this mundane, nasty thing. Okay? Yes?
I heard one time that the divorce rate in ISKCON is even higher than the common world. So it seems to me also sometimes that because of this conflict, that in one sense we are going for the grihastha ashram to fulfill some desires, but in other sense sometimes the path is not appropriate and the person is also saying lust is.
Well, I can't statistically say whether divorce is higher in ISKCON or outside of ISKCON, but the principle is that grihastha life means there's some vow, there's some principles, and one should be serious about one's purpose. If one thinks that in the grihastha ashram, there'll be, you know, my senses will be fully satisfied because I'll have full scoped now to, you know, indulge all of my lusts. You're dreaming. You're dreaming. There's no such, it's illicit. There's no space within the rules and regulations for it. And if you do it anyway, you're going to make yourself miserable. The more you increase your material life, the more you increase your misery. Krishna consciousness is for getting us free from misery. How do you get free from misery? Reduce your sex life. Sex life is miserable. It causes trouble. If you want to have children, they're trouble. They're expensive. We heard the figure $350,000 a piece up to the age of 18. Which, you know, certainly something to think twice about. So many, you know, so much lost sleep. Mothers can testify. The fathers can testify. Of course, lost sleep is good in Krishna consciousness, but so much trouble, so much anxiety. Uncertainty, what the outcome will be. Little Govindadas grows up to be a biker. And then anxiety for the parents, anxiety for the child also. So if you have the child, it's trouble. If you decide not to have the child, that's trouble. Kill it. So much trouble. Probably you have it or you don't have it. It's trouble. So the best advice is sex life should be brought down as close to zero as possible, even in householder life. Then, how will I be happy? You weren't going to be happy by sex life anyway. If you thought you were going to be happy by sex life, you're in the wrong movement. Because our teaching is that sex life makes you miserable. So our philosophy is to bring it down as close to zero as possible. And then have it in the grihastha ashram. And there'll be some, whatever pleasure there's supposed to be, that'll be there. But if you try and increase it, you make your life miserable. It's guaranteed. It's philosophically tested and proven. Yes, in the back.
What if a brahmachari finally decides that he has to be honest and he admit that he wants to go to the grihastha ashram? Now what if he has a continuous feeling of guilt that actually he's doing something wrong? Actually it's just lust and actually it's not so good, but anyway I have to go through it, so let's just admit it. So what about this type of...
What happens if a brahmachari gets married and then thinks that he's actually done something which is not such a good idea, and he regrets it, or he feels bad about it? What was the word that you used? Guilt. Feels guilty about it. Then he should feel himself in good company. Because Maharaj Yudhisthira expressed a similar feeling. He says to Narad Muni, now you've explained brahmachari life, sannyas life, what about the people who are mudhaddi? What about the people who have the intelligence of fools, like us? What about the grihasthas who are engaged in materialistic life, making money, taking care of their wives and children, taking care of their homes? What about us? How can we make spiritual progress? There's a flat earth theory by which everything becomes equal. We're in Rabindra Swarup Prabhu's class, this is being discussed, hierarchy. And there's a class of thinking by which we want to just, take the knife and move it on top of the batter and make everything, even. So that every ashram is the same as every other ashram and none of them has any advantage or disadvantage. There's a problem with that. According to the Vedic point of view, grihastha ashram is not so hot. It's not so hot. It's a compromise. You're better off avoiding it. It's not my fault. It's the way it is. Now, what do you do if you've accepted that? Accept it. What do you do if you went out and you bought a second-hand Ford instead of a first, a new Cadillac? Well, I bought according to my pocket. And it'll get me there. And I'll get in and drive. That's all. If you've accepted it, be fearful about it and serve Krishna. And think that I'm not brahmachari, I'm not grihastha, I'm not vanaprastha, I'm not sannyasi. I'm not Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Gopi, Bharata, Pada, Kamalaya, Dasa, Dasa, Amidas. I'm servant of the servant of Krishna. And read the chapter on householder life in 6th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. 7th. 7th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. Read the description. It's not that Narad Muni is advising. Once you become a grihastha, feel good about it. Buy that second car, buy that, this and that you always wanted. Just, pig out, let your senses have a holiday. He doesn't say that. Read about what grihastha life is. It's all about detachment. Isn't it? It's all about detachment. Sacrifice, detachment, restriction, duty. It's not all about, you know, going on holiday and giving those senses what they always wanted and fulfilling every one of those emotional needs that's been so long repressed, denied, and tortured. It's not about finally at last, you know, opening those valves on that poor steam kettle and letting all the pressure go. It's not about that, gang. It's not. It's about restriction. It's about duty. It's about detachment. It's about helping one another advance in spiritual life and getting off the material platform. That's what grihastha life is. Yes.
What would you say about those who are brahmachari or remain brahmachari who have a contemptuous attitude like, oh God, he bought a second-hand car, he's looking at him, poor guy. What would you say about this guy's attitude in a brahmachari or...
Well, of course, we say a couple obvious things. One is that one tends to reinforce one's decisions by knocking the other guy. You know, my car is so much better than your car. At every moment, I'm taking pleasure in my car. And when I see your car, my pleasure doubles. There's an element of that. There's a certain element of self-protection because one is in a world which is not very much congenial to brahmachari life, and so one may sometimes tend to, you know, give oneself some extra arguments, legitimate or not, for what one is doing, and one has some tendency to be on the bodily platform so that one doesn't see that there's a spirit soul. One sees whether the spirit soul is wearing saffron or white. So in that way, he's still a neophyte devotee, a person who's not very much advanced in spiritual life, and especially a person who's not advanced in culture. And culture is really something worth talking about, because along with knowledge, there's culture. And culture has to do, among other things, with how people treat one another. And in the Vedic culture, that we don't find that Narad Muni comes to the house of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the palace of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and says, how's it going, loser? I don't know why I came here, you know. Associated with guys like you who can't control their senses, but anyway, how's it going? Well, it was going okay till you came, you know. Uptight pretender brahmacharis who really, you know, we all know what you want. Saffron on the outside, white on the inside. That's not quite Vedic culture. But in the Vedic culture, there's cooperation and respect for all the different sections of society. The trained grihasthas are actually interested in seeing the brahmacharis successful in their training, because those brahmacharis will either remain brahmacharis and get freedom from material existence on the fast track, or they'll get married. And because they've been properly trained as brahmacharis, they'll be good grihasthas, they'll be successful grihasthas. Those who think that we'll ease up on brahmachari training, we'll train these kids to be, you know, reasonable, decent, normal, but, you know, we're not going to get them into this, you know, brahmachari thing, you know, all this sense control and all this aversion to friendship. They're cheating themselves, and they're cheating their kids. I have, we had a boy who was living with us who was a Gurukul graduate. He'd been to school in Vrindavan. And he was seeing how some of the other children were being raised, in a day school without strict training. And he said, these kids are getting cheated. These kids are getting cheated. He said, because, you know, we had it drummed into us. So we can't forget Krishna. We can't do these, even if we do something, you know, over the limit, we know what we're doing. So these kids aren't going to have a problem. You know, they can just leave. And they're not going to feel, you know, not going to, you know, just like you and I left whatever church or temple or religious denomination we had obligations to or affinity for, we were born into. They'll just walk out. So they're being cheated. Brahmachari Guru Kule Vasantanta Guru Ritam. Brahmachari life means the kid is taught how to control his senses. So that later, when he needs that skill, he has it. When he needs that ability to control his senses, he's got it. Adanta Gobi Vishatam Tamishram. Puna Punas Charva Ticharmanana. Those who aren't trained, all they'll know how to do is chew the chewed. Again and again and again. Adanta Gobi, because their senses are not controlled. They're helpless. And you see these schools full of poor little animals who don't know how to control their senses. And whose parents don't know how to control their senses and don't even have a clue that they're supposed to control their senses or it might be a good idea to control the senses. So the responsible grahasthas mean grahasthas who encourage brahmachari life, whether in their own children or the other children who they also see as their children. Grahastha means he sees all the brahmacharis as being like their children. The child is taught to go from house to house and beg from the ladies, mother, give this, that, and the mothers see all the boys as sons. So there's that relationship. So the brahmacharis want to, grihastha should want to see the brahmacharis successful in their brahmachari training. And the brahmacharis should be respectful to the grihasthas. After all, they're like our parents. Brahmacharis are the grihasthas are maintaining the brahmacharis. It means they're like the parents of the brahmacharis. And sannyasis also. Sannyasis are the children of the grihasthas. Either socially, ability, they support three-quarters of the society. They have a license which they earn and pay for. So they make a valuable contribution to the Krishna consciousness movement. Otherwise, griha medhi. That's another story. Is that okay?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
I would like to clarify my earlier point that a child should be taught discipline because it's going to give him freedom, but it should be taught by love. And actually, what is this love? It is a higher taste.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the only thing it can actually be. It must be a higher taste. So unless there is a higher taste, you may treat lust as an enemy. You may try to keep it. You may try to do anything you want with it. Unless you have a higher taste or you have been taught this higher taste, it will not go away.
That's our Sankirtan movement. That's a fact. It's not that we're just a monastic sect of people with tight underwear. There's supposed to be Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness is what provides the strength by which one is able to follow the principles of his ashram. And anyway, just to remain brahmachari, without Krishna consciousness, what's the use? There's so many Mayavadi brahmacharis. We're not after that. Our real thing is Krishna consciousness. And by Krishna consciousness, one becomes happy. One becomes happy. Therefore, Prabhupada used to say, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. If we chant Hare Krishna, worship the deities, read the books, do Sankirtan, follow these principles, we'll be happy. And if we're happy, then we're happy. Then material life is not... If we're happy on the spiritual platform, then we don't have to go slumming on the spiritual, on the material platform. If we don't have the spiritual substance, then there's no end to it. You know, with my own wife, I want to do this and that and the other thing, and my wife, this, that, and the other thing. So I, you know, the girl down the street, and this, that, and the other, and the, you know, the boys and the girls and the animals or what have you. There'll be no end to it. Tasmat tam indriyanyad, therefore control from the beginning. And control really means that rishikena rishikesha sevanam. Our senses should be engaged in the service of Krishna's senses. Because Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure if we serve Krishna. Nice. Good. Lokanath Maharaj.
Yeah, first of all, a little observation of our... You're saying culture, which we are lacking, which is a cause of lots of problems, including divorce. I was in Mauritius this recently, and the divorce rate of ISKCON families is almost zero.
Yeah, India also.
We are grahasthas. Several hundred families, some in the temple, they live, some outside. Divorce has not happened, maybe almost nil. So this is because of the culture.
Culture, definitely.
Because the Mauritius, the Indian connection is there. Also in India, our grahasthas within ISKCON are more steady, wife, family, husband together. Compared to the West, this is the difference of the culture. So that's one comment I wanted to make. Yeah. And a question?
Well, why don't I address the comment first. Therefore, I've been saying for a long time, if you want to know what Varnashram is, go to India and see. Everybody's speculating Varnashram means, you know, this, that. Just go to India and see what it is. You want to know what a sannyasi is? You go to India and see how sannyasis behave. You want to know what a vanaprastha is? Go and see them. You want to know how grahasthas live? You can go associate with first-class cultured grahasthas. You want to see what brahmachari is? They have them. You want to see vaishyas? Got them with a vengeance. You want to see even kshatriyas? Something like a kshatriya is still there. And you want to see brahmins? You'll find some pakka brahmins. And shudras, you know, in India, a shudra is a shudra. You know, in America, every shudra has, you know, got a, you know, an opinion about everything, and he's, you know, this, that, and he's puffed up with false prestige. In India, shudras, you know, they're shudras. Us. And you can see whole villages where people are, you know, all this... agrarian village economy that everybody's trying to spin out in their brains. Just go and see how they do it. Okay, it's not perfect, but Prabhupada said, dead or alive, an elephant is worth a lakh. The closest thing. And it's certainly a fact as regards the grahastha ashram. I have one friend who's a grahastha. And his wife has some psychological difficulties. She takes medication. As long as she takes her medication, she's okay. And at one point, he was thinking to divorce that wife. He's living in America, but he's Indian. He's thinking to divorce that wife and get another wife. His mother got so much all over his case. She just, you know, flattened the guy. What do you think you're doing? This wife has given you two children, and she served you very nicely, and she's a devotee, and who do you think you are? That was the end of that. Because there's culture. even if he still thought it was a good idea, his mother wouldn't go for it, and that was the end of it. And even if a person is so crude in India still that he thinks that I might like to do this and that, this and that, if he knows that what it will mean as far as his the standing of his family, he can't do it. My father will be so ashamed, my mother will be so much embarrassed. He can't do it. Because the values are different. And this is a failing. We'll talk about psychology and different schools of it, but it's a prejudice of various forms of Western psychological intervention that the purpose of life is to get happiness for yourself. And that's what life is about. And that is not a universally accepted principle. In non-Western cultures, that does not fly. In Oriental cultures particularly, it's not that your life just consists of doing whatever's going to make you happy. So much more it has to do with your obligations to your family. And there's nothing that makes that me-centered way of looking at things superior to the family way of looking at things. Huh? In Japan, in Korea, in so many Oriental countries, it's not, you know, what's going to make me happy. It's what I have to do for my family. My family responsibilities, my family obligations. But we have this Western outlook. Therefore, in India, for example, you find the joint family system. My publisher for Back to Godhead, he's maintaining his two children, he's maintaining his wife, he's maintaining his mother, and he's maintaining his grandmother. They're all living together. And that's not, you know, it's not like such a special thing. It's ordinary. Now, why should he? If he were in America, he'd say, you know, I mean, my grandmother's an old lady, and she's, you know, she should be in a home. And my mother should have a life of her own. Maybe she could find another fellow or something. And I think, you know, me and the wife and the kids could have a good life. Because we have a selfish outlook. I mean, forget about that we're neglecting Krishna and we forgot all about the Supreme Personality of God. Even materially, we're selfish. Me, 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 me. There's a fabulous essay, for those who might don't mind reading a few dirty and entertaining words. There's an American journalist, Tom Wolfe, who's written an essay called The Me Decade, from which the decade got its name, where he deals with this and many other aspects of our selfish, me-centered outlook. And it's not even materially hot stuff. It's not even materially wise or pleasing or advanced or viable even. It's crummy. It's low. It's decadent. It's stupid. It's unrewarding. It's short-sighted. And so on and so on. And that's, I'm not speaking spiritually, I'm just talking materially. You know, what is the kind of material happiness where, you know, you have lots of intense satisfaction until you're about 40 and everything else is downhill, and when you're 60 or 70 you're just, you know, discarded goods. Is that, you know, something to look forward to? But everyone who's, you know, 20 now, if you don't die, you're going to become 60 and 70. So just in terms of the overall scheme of things, you know, what are you setting yourself up for? If you're pushing this me-centered way of life, you know, when your kids buy into it, where does that leave you? Moron. The Indian way of life, or in its original form, the Vedic way of life is simply better. Because it comes from God. And this other way of life comes from Nitya Vairina, from our eternal enemy that says, what do you care about them for? You care about yourself most. You care about you and your senses and whatever is going to directly satisfy your senses. Kamo Poga Parama. What's the business of life? Business is to satisfy your senses. That's the highest principle. Just do it. That's not the Vedic way of life. And to the extent that that mentality is walking in the door, whether under the cover of psychological health or mental balance or community development or being reasonable or being, you know, more in touch with people around us or being realistic, or being this or that or the other, it should just be chucked. It should just be shown its way to the door, pushed hard, and then have the door shut behind it. It doesn't belong in our society. It should be systematically, diligently, persistently hunted down and driven out. In our own individual lives and in our social lives. Our social fabric is not being torn apart by an excess of self-control. It's not being torn apart by an excess of mental equilibrium. It's not being torn apart by fanatical sadhana. Or an overdose of reading. It's being torn apart by lust, which somehow or other we've gotten the idea should be tolerated and indulged and expanded. And it shouldn't. Nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukham naparamgatim. Krishna says, "Ya shastra vinimuchu." This is all shastra. This is not, you know, some artificial kinds of rules and regulations. Shastra vidhi. Ya shastra vinimuchu. If one gives these things up, vartate kama karta, and he acts according to his own kama, what his desires are telling him, what his own emotional needs are demanding. Nasa siddhim. He doesn't become perfect. He doesn't attain perfection. Nasa siddhim avapnoti. Nasukham. He doesn't become happy. Na paramgatim. And he loses his chance to go back to Godhead. Tasmat shastra pramanam te karya karya vivastita. Therefore, one should know what to do and what not to do from shastra. Not from these half-baked pop psych advisors, not from one's own mind, not from one's friends who've forgotten the philosophy, not from the karmis. One should know what is what from shastra. Because Krishna's always right. And if we follow that, we'll be happy as brahmacharis, as grihastas, as vanaprastas, as sannyasis, as women, as men, as spirit souls, because we know this is, it's not the business. The business, the life of my senses and their objects, that's not my real life. My real life is that I'm not this body. We have to get the philosophy straight, and we have to get the culture straight. How people should. Prabhupada could say the most. And Prabhupada didn't say anything heavier than what we're saying. we're timid by comparison. The things Prabhupada said were outrageous. But he knew how to say them nicely. He knew how to say them nicely. So that people didn't feel, you know, like they should just pack it all in and, you know, drop dead. But he used to say the thing. He used to put it all on the line. But he used to do it nicely. He used to say, you know, anything I might say about women, Prabhupada said something five times as heavy. But he didn't treat women like dirt. He knew how to treat women nicely. Knew how to treat children. It's culture. How to treat a woman, how to treat a child, how to treat a servant, how to treat your husband, how to treat your wife, how to treat your guru, how to treat your godbrothers, how to treat the godbrothers of your guru, or those who are godbrothers of, you know, from another guru, how to treat everybody. Culture. What was Prabhupada, what is the symptom of a Vaishnava? He'll be a perfect gentleman. He'll be a perfect gentleman. The philosophy and the culture. Okay, our time's over. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.